Reading FC made it 7 defeats in a row against Bristol City on Wednesday night to leave the Royals hovering over the precipice of the Championship relegation zone. It feels like that's been the case for ages. It's almost one of those situations where you just want to get it done. How we're still not inside the relegation zone is just a mystery. But that's one of the mysteries we'll be discussing in this week's episode of the Tireless Den Podcast, episode 289. A little bit of an episode/podcast extra this one will be with your host Mark Mayo as we review the Bristol City game and have a look at the Coventry game coming up. We're a bit of a midweek bite as we've not had a weekend game due to the FA Cup on Saturday. To do that with me, Alan West. Westy, how's it going, mate?
Yeah, very well, Mark. I hope you're feeling well. Slightly disappointed after last night's performance, but we will get into that, no doubt.
Yes, it was. It depends who you listen to, really, this one, doesn't it? If you listen to Veljko Paunović, it was a pretty decent, stirring comeback effort. If you listen to people who were at the game in the away end, it maybe wasn't such a glowing assessment. So, yeah, we'll get into that. And then, as I say, a bit of an extra one this week. So we haven't got a mailbag or news bites coming up, but we will have a big match preview in a bit to talk about the Coventry on and off the pitch game there. So let's get into the recap then, and as always, a big thanks to our sponsors, ZCZ Films, and our Patreon subscribers, before we get into the recap.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Well, we last won a game, Westy, on November the 27th. Since then, we've obviously failed to win. We've drawn 2 games, we've lost 8, scored 9 and conceded 27, which is a staggering rate. Even if you take out the Fulham game where we conceded 7, we're still conceding at over 2 goals a game in the last couple of months. And we're in November 27th, is now February the 10th. That is a hell of a long time to go without a win. And once again, it happens on Wednesday at Bristol City.
Yeah, I don't know what the stats are for winning midweek games, but I think they're appalling as well, from what I heard the other day when I was looking through Twitter. It's just not good enough, is it? I mean, they can say all they like about a 15-minute effort at the end of a match, but that again last night I thought was poor. I think we've got 9 points from a possible 51, something like that. I mean, if that's not sacking statistics, then I don't know what is. You alluded to the fact just a minute ago about if you listen to Paunović's, if you listen to his end of game interviews, I'm not sure what he's watching. I really, if he's trying to convince me that he's right, then I think he's failing, and I think he's failing on many levels now. And again, I quite like the man originally, but now it's just getting towards a joke. I mean, I think me and you could take over Reading and get 9 points in 51. So the manager's obviously not doing his job. The team, I even again thought last night, I mean, yes, 15 minutes there was okay, 2-0 football, they're going to be. But before that, I mean, the defending, I thought both goals was borderline a joke. And I thought Morrison was appalling on the night. I thought he had a terrible match. People pointing at sort of Jao now. I said a few weeks back when I was on the show, he's not going to be match fit for weeks and weeks. And if we're pinning our hopes on him and Mate coming back and firing us out of trouble, then it's a big ask for him. And again, where was Ajari again? Well, what's going on with him? There's many questions that are left unanswered, and they seem to be piling up rather than getting answered, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, the defence is the first point of call for this one. We've obviously let Liam Moore go, which is a decision that I think, you know, how they handled it, I think ultimately was a decision that most fans kind of backed. We've got Tom McIntyre still out injured, so basically, and Scott Dan's injured as well, of course. So we basically got Morrison and Holmes as our only 2 fit senior centre-backs. And, I mean, Holmes, we've seen a lot of Tom Holmes this season, and it feels to me like he's a player that when he's at right-back and he's not got quite as much to defend, and he's, you know, he's good athletic, he's all right on the ball, I think he does a decent job. At centre-back, though, it just seems like there's a little bit too much positioning-wise that he's not gained yet. And it's really hard to tell, isn't it? Because a lot of players who are young, maybe it's the case that he's just not learned and not wised up yet to being a centre-back at the Championship. Maybe he never will. But I guess, you know, we've seen players before, like Jake Cooper, players like Rob Dickey have left the club and gone and had good careers. Having good careers in the Championship, and maybe it was a mistake we let them go. Tom Holmes, we don't know how he's going to turn out. But Michael Morrison, on the other hand, is an absolutely experienced, staunch centre-back. And if you look at the stats of the games he's played this year, there are none of them that Reading have kept a clean sheet in. Only one of them, and I think there's about 12 that he's played, has been one goal conceded, a couple of three fours rather, a bunch of threes, and you know the rest two. So I just feel like Michael Morrison at the moment, he's a bit of a spent force at centre-back, isn't it? And it's a real shame because he was so good last year, but this year, injury problems, getting on a bit perhaps, never the paciest player, it's just not working.
Do you know who he's reminded me of? Every time I watch him now, he reminds me of McShane in his last year here where he'd lost his yard and he was getting exposed quite freely. I think if you look at that first goal, and I've just had a look at it before I come on air again, I'd have to watch it through my fingers, but I watched it again. If you look when he goes through, I mean, Holmes looks paceless for a young lad. You can't gain pace, can you? You're either quick or you're not quick. So that's always going to be a problem for him, I think, which is why it will stop him getting to any sort of level higher than the Championship. The first goal, all right, they got the run on them, but the goalkeeper saves the ball. And after the goalkeeper saved the ball, there's probably about 2 or 3 seconds where the player's on the floor and he tries to play it across. Now, if you look at that second that the goalkeeper saves the ball, you see Morrison in the background jogging back, Rinomota and Laurent jogging back. And when that ball was crossed, there was 3 Bristol City players in that box. 4, actually. There was 4 Bristol City players in that box, and there was 3 Reading players, excluding the goalkeeper. You think, is that people busting their necks to get back and defend? Because it didn't look like it to me. And if Morrison would have just put in a decent sprint, he'd have probably got in to intercept that. But he didn't. He jogged back and got caught. Keeper made a save. He'd done his bit as far as I was concerned. Wasn't great, convincing, but he'd done his bit. He slowed him down, but there were still 3 players that could have took a cross and tapped the ball into an empty net. So it was poor. And again, just before half-time, that's the last thing he wanted. Before that, was it even? It was relatively even, but Bristol City were a poor side. I mean, they are dreadful. And if you can't get something against them, I think they haven't kept a clean sheet for months, have they? And they've took a few beatings in the last few weeks as well. If you can't beat them, then you've got a problem. But the second goal, oh my God, it was like watching a kid's football match. Morrison, like you said, an experienced centre-back. I mean, he's in his 30s now, should be doing better. He's kicked the ball up the striker's backside, and then he's panicked, sprinted over to try and block a shot, put it in his own net. And you think, oh my God, is that what we've got to try and keep us in the division? Holmes and Morrison are our two centre-backs. I mean, you can blame the manager all you like, and again, I'm the first one to stick a knife in. But just basic defending is just poor. And the effort, the lack of effort. I mean, bust the gut. I don't care if people get beat. I don't care if they get beat 4-5-0. What I do care about is if they give it everything they've got. And are you telling me that last night them players give it everything they had? Because it didn't look like it to me until, let's say, it was 2-0 down, and they thought, well, let's have a go now. And getting players forward as well. Again, I say this every single week. Sit down and watch Coppell's side. Sit down and watch Leeds a couple of years back, or the last year, a couple of years back, so when they got promoted. When they attack teams, they get players into the box. There's not one, there's not two, there's 4 or 5. Teams are not good enough in this division to catch you when you put a lot of players forward. They're not Man City, they're not Liverpool. Do you know what I mean? They haven't got them sort of players that can streak up the pitch, get numbers forward quickly, and score goals against you like that. And if they do, then fair play to them, but it'd be a rare treat. Okay, so why is it that in the first half especially, you've got Jao maybe in the box. You've got a couple of midfielders sort of jaunting forward, but not really trying too hard. It's no wonder we don't score any goals or enough goals because we don't get players forward quick enough. It's all round poor. I thought, yeah, 15 minutes, great. But it was 2-0 down then and the game was already done. And let's face it, their goalkeeper didn't have a hard night, did he? I think he made 2 saves maybe. The penalty was a good penalty. Looked like a bit of a dive to me, but poor all round, I thought. Real poor.
Yeah, it's a good point you make on the players getting into the box, but this is something that Paunovic's teams have never done, have they? You think of how many goals Rinomota and Laurent have scored over the last 18 months. I think there's probably less than 5 combined. We've never been a team that's got centre mids into the box. And the wingers, you know, when Mate's playing, yes, he'll get into the box, but I mean, it's rare, isn't it? When you look back over the entirety of Paunovic's tenure, he's just never done it. We've always relied on having Zhao as the man. Swift, yes, he does get in, but you know that's been when he's playing, basically. And half the time, you kind of think that that's more John Swift takes it upon himself more than any kind of direction or anything to go and do that. So, yeah, it's just another case, isn't it? We've seen it so many times this season. It's another case of Reading going into a game and not taking the impetus from the start. They say about 2-0 football. I mean, the stats just are absolutely correct on that. 3 shots Reading had before the 2 goals. Afterwards, I think we kind of knocked it up to 13 or whatever, nothing, you know, nothing too significant. But even then, obviously, it's clearly after the second goal that we pick up. And this is where we end up with the manager again, is that I think on this podcast, you can probably chart, if you're interested enough, you could chart the history of where we stood on Paunovic. Probably, you know, more reluctant to say, let's get rid of him than maybe fans on Twitter were at the start. But I mean, since the Kidderminster game, since the Fulham game, it's just been no doubt in my mind. And basically what we have every week is, it's a sign, isn't it? We've had it before. I remember all the way back to Brendan Rodgers having a famous barmy with Tim Dellow and BBC Barks. Nigel Adkins kind of had it as well. Even Yap Stam. But when managers turn up at the end of the game and effectively tell you that what you've just seen was a really decent, heroic performance that unfortunately didn't get a result, we all know that that wasn't the case. We all know that effectively, as you say, Bristol City weren't a good team. So Reading going there and losing 2-1 with a bit of 2-0 football at the end, that's not, you know, going to Man United and just coming out, oh, we're a bit unlucky with the lucky breaks here and there. That's just a bad performance. And it seems like Paunovic, I don't know, do you actually see a future between now and the end of the season where Paunovic will get sacked? Because it just feels like we are totally going through the motions at the moment.
Matt, if you can't get sacked from the results we've had over the last 2 months, I don't know when you can get sacked. It's just utterly appalling. As soon as we lost to Kidderminster, that should have been the curtain call. Do you know what I mean? Fulham beating us 7-0, embarrassing. And we're just losing games to teams that are not even that good. Do you know what I mean? And there doesn't ever seem to be any progress. It's not like, yeah, there's been a lot of individual errors, don't get me wrong. Holmes has scored an own goal recently. Morrison scored an own goal. Stupid passes at the back, conceding stupid goals, which you can't always blame the manager for. That's individual errors. But come on. I mean, how many times you've got to make the same mistakes before someone says, do you know what? I don't think this job's for you. I mean, let's face it. The turning point was not getting the playoffs last year. Great start to his managerial career at Reading. 8 wins from the bounce. But how did we not get in the playoffs with a team we had, with Richards and Elise in it? I mean, if you can't get that team in the playoffs, then losing them, we always knew it's going to be a loss. And let's face it, we lost Maytay and Jowell as well this year for pretty much all the season. But even so, I mean, the same basic stupid errors, the sort of wranglings with inside the club, you're sacking your captain. I mean, there's stuff going on that I'm sure we've got no idea what's going on behind closed doors. But looking at what's happening on the pitch, it ain't good enough, is it? And just for your professionalism, I mean, you look at them players on the pitch, every single one of them, every week I hear the same old thing. This is a good side. We've got some good players in this team. But where are they? Because they're not doing it. I mean, there's not one player you can really say, do you know what? Been brilliant every week. I mean, I felt sorry for Southwood. I mean, why he's been dropped, God only knows. Yep, he's made a few ricks. When you're playing out defence and you get as many shots on target as these teams are having against us, you're going to make the odd mistake. So to drop him and sort of make him some sort of scapegoat, I thought was poor. And this goalkeeper who's come in, yeah, he might have a big career in Edwin, but is he that much better than Southwood? From what I see last night, probably not.
Yeah, I would argue the other way around. I'd say that Southwood, with the errors he's made, letting him out of the team for a game, I'd say was a fairly reasonable decision. But the problem is now is that Reading have got a bit of a rod for their back, haven't they? Because it's all well and good if you bring in Hein, who's an Arsenal teenager. If, you know, we've had Arsenal loanees before, such as Martinez, much, much more experienced, obviously, and obviously a more talented goalkeeper from what we can tell. But if Hein comes in and does well, then it's a good decision. It's all fine. But he didn't really have a great performance. I wouldn't blame him for particularly either of the goals, but from Ollie's player ratings, he was saying that he was erratic in his distribution and stuff like that, which it means that Paunovic now has another decision to make does he go for an underperforming goalkeeper or an underperforming goalkeeper that he's only dropped 2 days ago? It's just another kind of difficult decision to make that there isn't really a good answer to, is there?
No, and I thought actually team-wise, when you looked at it last night, I wasn't too disappointed that Swift had been dropped. I think his form has dropped quite erratically over January. So maybe it's a shot in the arm that he needs. Drinkwater doesn't divide opinion. I think everyone's pretty much of the same opinion that he's certainly not the player we've seen over the course of his career. The question goes, do they really care that much, the loney players? Again, if you look at their form, then you'd have to say probably not, because even Bashiru, I thought, again, his form has dropped erratically. I mean, he should have scored last night when I'm pretty sure it was him that went through early. I was still messing about with a red button, wouldn't load properly, but I did see it on the replay and it looked like Bashiru should have hit the target. But he started off really well. And now you're looking at me, you think, he's starting today, so what? I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are, but for me, the loan players have been all right, but they're 6 out of 10s every week, aren't they? And it doesn't, no one's pulling up any trees.
No, they're not. I think the only, Tom Ince had obviously won the penalty. He had moments of genius, which you're probably going to get from Tom Ince, aren't you? He's going to be a player who probably doesn't do very much for 70 minutes, but the 20 minutes he's looking good, you kind of hope you get something out of it. And I suppose in his sense, he's maybe a bit different because he's out of contract at the end of the season. I do genuinely think that the players out of contract, they are fighting for their careers. There is no, obviously, if you're, you know, I don't want to say that Drinkwater or Babar Akhman are these sort of players, but if you're just going to go back to Chelsea at the end of the season and be on 2 years left of your contract there, and it's obviously a nice contract, and yeah, then you can make an argument that they're not going to be that bothered. But I do think that players who are out of contract, realistically, if they're not going to look that bothered, they aren't going to get a good contract at the end of the year, are they?
No, definitely not. And there's not anyone that you could say really deserves one at the moment, is there? I mean, in and out, they've had a few decent games. Hoylett's had a decent game here and there, but over the course of a 10-game span, I don't think anyone's really looked great. Like I said, 5 and 6s every week. It's not really pulling up any trees and getting you a nice contract at the end of the season, is it? I'm sure someone will take them because they've got talent, but if it's not us, I don't think we'll be too disappointed.
No, well, let's hear from Veljko Paunović now, and as we say, hear about what he said after the game with the club, and then we'll go straight into Big Match Preview and talk about the Coventry game on Saturday.
I think overall we had a good performance today. I think very disappointed with the result, but there were a lot of positives. I think the team is today played and put up one of the best collective and team performances, and that's definitely something that we were looking for in the last or past months. Now we have to fix more urgent mistakes we commit when we concede goals, and that was the difference today. And again, how we ended the game with opportunities and that spirit and that conviction was something that we were looking to recover, and I think it's back. Now we have to quickly recover and prepare for a hard but promising month of February.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
So we come into the 150th anniversary party for Reading. Perhaps a party that we'd much rather be having in December, as it was planned against Luton. It was meant to be like a good 20,000 plus crowd for the Luton game. Whether that's still the case for the Coventry game, I'd imagine there are probably a few fans who've had to get refunds. I think it's going to be scaled back from what I've kind of understand about the celebrations and everything. I don't know exactly what they've got planned, but I've heard it's been scaled back a little bit because of the postponement. And we come in against the Coventry team, who are 13th after a pretty decent start. 1-2, drawn 1, lost 2 of their last 5. You go into these sort of games, Westy, and you think, this is a team that's there for the taking. We should have a big atmosphere behind us, you know, a big performance to match it. The confidence of that actually happening, though, is pretty low at the moment.
I thought you were talking about the Coventry managerial team. I thought that's what they'd be thinking, definitely. Whether we'll be thinking, it's a different matter. And this 150th sort of party is a bit like you've arranged for your granddad's 100th, and he's died the day before, but you do the party anyway. It's that feel to it. Do you know what I mean? It's utterly abysmal. I mean, there could be no greater dis for 150 years of history to have this going on in the background. But on the flip side, let's try and remain positive when it comes to this, because you think it's 150 years. There's been a lot of great times. There's been quite a few bad ones, don't get me wrong, but we've had some great times over, especially the last sort of 20 years or so, 25 years. We've had a good run here and there. We've had some good sides, we've had some good players, we've had some good times. So let's try and sort of focus on that a little bit, because obviously we don't want to be too downbeat. But just like I said, it's like your granddad's 100th that he ain't going to turn up to. Do you know? It's that sort of feel to it. So Coventry, again, they've had some good results over the course of this season. I think they surprised a few this year. I think probably a lot of people thought they'd be nearer the bottom, but they're sort of chugging along in the Championship. They've got sort of chances. They've won some games against some good sides. So if anyone thinks these are going to be an easy match on Saturday, I really, really doubt it. I think they'll come and give us a good game. Only fear for me is if we concede early and with a big crowd and the atmosphere as it is, sort of might be before the game, could have a detrimental effect on our players and getting a result out of the match. But hopefully it can galvanise on the big crowd and hopefully they'll come in and put a performance in.
Yeah, and Coventry are probably going to be a team that's going to really annoy us in the sense that they've not got huge amounts of quality, but they're going to be well organised, they're going to work hard, and they're going to, you know, put the hard yards in that's the sort of thing that exposes us at the moment, not like anything doesn't expose us at the moment. I did see a tweet from Rob Morris on that Tarlas then retweeted in just before the Bristol City game, that from a programme from 1983, a 3-1 defeat for Reading in what was ultimately a successful season, but it was our last season in the lowest tier. And he says, remember, things have been worse. Obviously, we need points tonight, as we didn't get. But I guess it does kind of show a bit of perspective. But, I mean, the trap door, if it does open for Reading, doesn't particularly show. You know, it could be a bottomless pit, I suppose, is the fear at the moment. And that kind of links in with this this officially organised pre-game protest that fans have been talking about on social media and kind of organising. As to whether the 150th anniversary game is a bit of a crass time to do it because we should be focusing on the history, or whether it's the absolutely perfect moment for it because our future is in such jeopardy, I will leave up to people to decide for themselves. But I suppose, Westy, it's a bit of a sign of the times. I don't know what it's going to achieve, but here we are. It's no surprise that fans are sort of taking these sort of steps, is it?
Yeah, and I've been at Reading games before where the fans have gone on the pitch. Let's get this right. I'm not encouraging people to go on the pitch. What I'm saying is I've been at protests before. I think the Bullivan days when we went on the pitch to sort of get the manager out. I don't think it had that feel to it. Hopefully not. But it's got to a stage now that we keep saying it, and I always say you've got your keyboard warriors that go on Twitter and say stuff. But let's face it, who's listening? No one really. No, I'm sure the club don't sit there reading Twitter, worrying about what we've got to say on social media. Sometimes the only protest is a proper protest. What it will achieve, again, I agree with you. I don't think it will achieve an awful lot, because if it was going to have change in structure, it would have been done a long, long time ago. But it really needs, and we've been saying this for months, it really needs the owners to come out and say, this is our plan, this is what we're going to do. And let's make strides to do that, because at the moment it seems like they're going to let us get relegated, because that is where it's going. There is no other alternative if this carries on than us going down. Like I said, it's a miracle that we're not in the bottom three already. I mean, Derby, 21-point deduction, they always had the tactic, and they're all going to have it. And we said it when we played them, that they've got nothing to lose, so they can throw the kitchen sink at it. And that's what they're doing. And there's no doubt in my mind that they will catch us if this carries on the way it's going, because Reading don't look like winning the match, and Derby are picking up points left, right and centre. So yes, protest, great idea. It's good that they've done it on this game, really, because let's face it, it's going to have the maximum impact, because we should have a big crowd in. The only thing I would hope is that when the game starts, the players get backed until the end. And again, I always say this, if you want to boo them at the end, if you want to give them pelters at the end, if you want to shout about the manager at the end, then you crack on, because you've got every right as a season ticket holder or a man or woman that pays every day to go and watch that tripe. If you want to complain at the end, then you crack on. But during the game, just stick behind the players. And if they don't put the effort in, then if you want to turn on them, that's down to you. But as far as I'm concerned, I'll be there on Saturday. I'll get behind the team. And then when the game finishes, then I'll let them know what I think then. But until that time, it's important that the fans are there for what they are there for, which is support the team. So please support them all you can for them 90 minutes. What you do before that and after it, totally up to you, as long as it's legal and no one gets hurt, obviously. If you want to give them stick, then great, but just leave it till the end.
Yeah, I mean, looting the megastore probably isn't the best idea before the game. Not that you'll find any home shirts there, because they're completely sold out. So
if we're looking for shirts, you would have to look elsewhere. Yeah. So, I'm not sure anyone's going to loot in any stores to go and get shirts. If anything, they'd be giving them back.
Yeah, they're trying to rip off the scratch off the Liam Moore thing they got on the back, isn't it? The number off it. So yeah, I mean, from my personal point of view, I suppose that the protesting getting Paunovic out is probably what I'd be focusing on at the moment. As I wrote in the Tyler Send on the blog, we've had loads of stuff about it on the website, so definitely go and check that out. But that's what I'd stick. That's what I kind of focus on at the moment, because that's the only thing that can save us. Things about how the club is run behind the scenes, people like Keir Jurachbin, long-term visions and all that sort of stuff. I absolutely want clarity and the club to do better on that. But ultimately, maybe that's something that can happen in the summer, etc. It's very difficult, isn't it? Because as we say, having an actual impact on this sort of stuff as fans is difficult, especially when we've got an owner who, you know, I don't think he'll be there on Saturday. Maybe he will be. But he supposedly watches every game in China. Watching Wednesday night's game from China probably would have meant being up about 5 in the morning, which, I mean, it just feels a bit unlikely that he's going to be watching that game live, isn't it? It's annoying, Westy, because it's just one of those situations where you just feel a bit powerless, and we are financially so tied to Dayong. Not that I want Dayong to go, but we are just in that state of dependency now, and actually trying to get him to do better, there isn't really any clear way to do that.
No, we've let ourselves really get into a position where you have a sort of overall supreme leader, if we want for a better or words. It's all is now. The club basically belongs to him. And if he did decide to walk away tomorrow, there isn't a thing we could really do about it. We could complain, but it's going to fall on deaf ears. And it's a shame that the club's been allowed to get into that state, really. I think there's been a massive detach from, I mean, people used to moan about Badeski, but looking back now, what a wonderful job he'd done. And not only that, he seemed accessible to a certain extent. You know what I mean? He was always on the radio. He lives locally. The team were always accessible to the fans. You've got social media now, but it's not the same, is it? I mean, when I was a kid, and again, going back a few years now, used to sort of walk to grounds with the players, and now they're so far detached from you, it's kind of unbelievable. We're lucky that we've got a few local lads in the side, but it just seems that you're supporting a team that doesn't give you a lot back at the moment. Do you know what I mean? If you're winning, you can sort of paper over the cracks, can't you? If you're winning games, no one really that bothered. But when you're losing, you sort of start thinking about what that sort of club means to you. And at the moment, there's a massive disregard for the supporters, as far as I'm concerned. We haven't got a real team. We've got a lot of players sort of that have come in on short-term contracts. We've got players on loan. There doesn't seem to be any sort of partnership between the fans and the players. You know, that you're there for your job, and that's to support the team. And they're there for their job. That's to give you all they've got. The manager just talks baloney every week. I mean, more and more I listen to him, the more I think, where did we get him from? Was it some sort of mental institution? Because the stuff that he's saying that I really can't see. It's just a shame. It's a shame. It will change, hopefully for the better. Again, I wouldn't disagree with anyone protesting. I really don't blame them. Fair play to them if they do. I know quite a few people wearing clown wigs. I know that went right across Twitter, and I thought it was quite amusing. Reminded me a little bit of the pants day a few decades ago now. It's a shame. I just don't feel connected to the club like I should do. And again, that's 40 years as a fan, and I'm saying that. So even the younger fans are feeling that. It's just not the same as it was. And I think there needs to be a massive change. But we've got ourselves into a terrible rut. There's only one person can really get us out of, and that's the chairman. So let's hope that he does.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I'd add to that is that it's that word club, isn't it? The club idea of actually having something that's just more than a team. Like, there is a Reading team at the moment. We know about the 11 players on the pitch and everything, but as a club, we're not entirely sure what there is actually that we're meant to be holding on to at the moment. And yes, there's the academy and, you know, all the, as you say, local players and stuff like that, that there are kind of, that there are things there, but it just doesn't feel like an actual club at the moment. In the same way that, I mean, it's perhaps a bit of an extreme, but Liverpool is clearly a club and all these sort of things. And Derby at the moment have obviously probably got the opposite. They've got a club and not a team. So it's just something that Reading have got themselves into at the moment. As for the Saturday game, that's the immediate future. 3 points will probably go a hell of a long way to making us feel a bit better about the situation. Prediction time then, what are you going to say for this one?
Do you know what, I've been stupidly going with my heart recently, and I don't think I've had too many right results over the last few weeks. So I'm going to have to go with my brain. And after watching that yesterday, I can only see one thing happening, and that's a Reading defeat. So I'm going to say Coventry 2-0.
Yeah, it's so difficult, isn't it? I said 2-1 for Bristol City. So actually, for the first time in, I think, months, I picked up 3 points for Prediction League, which I'll do a full rundown of next week. But yeah, it's on the one side of me, I completely see the 2-0. On the other side of me, I can see a 0-0 draw for all, you know, all the fans turning up and it just being absolutely dreadful. I'm going to go 1-0 Coventry and split the difference. Because, yeah, I think the idea that we're just going to turn up and put a stirring performance in backed by the fans and for the occasion and everything just doesn't feel to me like it's grounded in reality. If it happens, brilliant. As we've always said on this podcast, absolutely delighted to be proven wrong with any criticism we have of the team. It's not what we want to see come into reality, but we've got to call it out when it happens. So there we go then, Westy. It's going to be, hope you got your party hat and your balloons ready for Saturday, and hopefully it'll be a good afternoon.
Yeah, for my granddad's 100th, eh?
bring the eulogies.
I will be there, no doubt about it.
Yeah, same. So hopefully it'll be a good game. We'll be back with a full episode of the podcast, mailbag and all the extra bits after the weekend game. Hopefully it'll be a good anniversary game. I've not really got too much more to say about that. I suppose that's all we've got left, is just the tiniest shreds of hope, and let's cling to them and hope that something will come to fruition and we'll have a good birthday party after all. And we'll be back after the weekend then, and thank you for listening. Come on, you arse. It's fine.